It's hard out here. I know it is. A life in the arts, whether as an actor, a performer, or a writer, is no easy feat. To strive for excellence is righteous, to make our mark, or at the very least, to hit our mark. But who can afford to be a specialist anymore, and who would even want to if they could? We are all multidimensional creatures, capable of loving seemingly incompatible things. And today, to cut through all the noise, to sift through all the static, one must wear many hats. Fortunately for Leonore Watling, she always liked wearing hats. Welcome to The Third Story. I'm Leo Sidran. Leonor Elizabeth Ceballos Watling grew up in a Madrid that was waking up after 40 years of dictatorship. The daughter of a Spanish academic father and a British mother who had herself been raised in Africa, she wore multiple hats from birth, speaking multiple languages, fitting into multiple spaces, yet never quite belonging to any one of them. As a child, Leonor lived with a constant awareness of mortality. Her father was sick throughout her youth, and two aunts died suddenly when she was a girl. When she was still a teenager, her father passed away, stepping out of the frame, just as she herself was stepping into the public eye. By then, she was already a working actress, first on Spanish television, then in film. She rose to international prominence in 2002 with Pedro Almodóvar's Talk to Her. And around the same time, she began a parallel career in music. She founded the band Marlango and released 7 albums over the next 15 years. Music became a second home, an outlet for joy, for balance, and creative control. From early on, Leonor walked the line between cultures, between life and death, between fame and privacy, between acting and music, between success and striving. Today, she's one of the most recognizable faces in Spanish cinema, constantly at work in new films and series. And yet, she remains a gentle soul, quiet but forceful, easygoing but deliberate, warm but a little mysterious, even to those who know her well. I myself met Leonor years ago through Jorge Drexler, with whom she shares a life and 2 children. Over the years, we sang together informally and occasionally on each other's projects. But last year, she came to me with a proposal. "Let's make a record together," she said. I said, "Great. We'll call it Leo and Leo." Or in Spain, Leo and Leo. That album, recorded in Madrid with my groovy French band, that's my regular touring band in Europe, and featuring special guests including Jorge Drexler, Kevin Johansson, my daughter Sol Sidran, Moses Petru, Michael Lenhart, John Ellis, and Madrid-based guitar player Javi Peña, has just come out. So I decided to sit down with Leonor in Javi Peña's Madrid studio and ask her the questions I had somehow never gotten around to asking before. We talked about her childhood, her career milestones, the challenges of fame and motherhood, and the search for creative freedom across disciplines. And of course, we unpacked our own ongoing collaboration along the way. Third-story.com is the place to find the archive, hundreds of conversations, including some with other members of Spain's creative and musical community, as well as Leonor's own extended family, like Jorge Drexler and Pablo Drexler, too, plus conversations with some of the collaborators on the record, like Moses Petru, John Ellis, and Michael Lenhart. Visit my Substack, leosidran.substack.com, for news, writing, and to join the mailing list. And remember, The Third Story is made in collaboration with WBGO Studios. Visit wbgo.org/studios to explore all of their award-winning content. Here's me and Leonor Watling sitting down in Madrid and talking it down. Yesterday, when I talked to you about doing an interview, I said, "I have so many things I want to know."
Yeah.
And you said, "No, you know everything already." And I thought, well, no, I really don't. So part of me wants to just ask you all the questions that I never ask you.
Go ahead.
Because, you know, when you're friends with somebody, you kind of like don't ask certain questions.
It's true.
Were you born in Madrid?
Yes, born and raised here.
Your mom is?
My mom is English.
Yeah.
But it's a very special kind of British person, which is colony raised
yes.
person. So she was raised in Kenya. So in some ways, she's much more British than any British person, because they were brought up in this sense that doesn't exist anymore. So she's basically from nowhere. Mm-hmm. She's lived in Spain more than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
So she's more Spanish than anyone. But she has a super thick accent, and she's very, very English.
That's interesting that the sort of distance from the motherland keeps you closer to it in a way, to the traditions of it.
To the traditions and I think to the fantasy of that mother. I think that happens to my partner, Jorge. Mm-hmm. He's from Uruguay, but he's lived here almost 30 years.
Yeah.
So he has a very deep and rooted attachment. And in a way, it's much stronger than people that live there.
Totally.
They don't need to prove they are Uruguayan. Yeah.
But so in your case, your situation is a little different because you don't have any personal attachment to England other than whatever your mother gave
you. No, it's very strange. And I've talked about this to lots of half and halves.
Uh-huh.
Like, because now it's much more usual. I mean, my kids in school have plenty of mixed friends. But when we were growing up, I remember my sister and I, we could smell each other. I could go into a classroom and I would know immediately there was someone there that was as off as I was.
And off in the sense of not feeling like you totally fit in any place?
You don't, because you sing the songs, like in Spain, for example, they dub all the films.
Yeah.
And they dub the songs.
Yeah.
So all the Disney songs, my class would sing in Spanish, I would sing in English.
Yes.
My bedtime stories were Beatrix Potter.
Yes.
So all my mother's influence is really, really important, but it's not...
It's not that it's not authentic, but...
But at the same time, it's I don't have... I tried to live in London.
You
when
did?
I was 18. Yeah, I went to study theater there. And it's really... I'm not half English. I'm half my mother's Englishness.
Mm-hmm. So when you got there, it was like, oh, this isn't home either. This isn't...
No.
And then your father is Spanish.
Yeah.
But did he pass away when you were young?
When I was 18.
When you were 18. Mm. Was he sick?
He was sick since I was born. He had a heart condition.
Uh-huh.
So that was always looming over. He had 3 heart attacks and operations. And it was a thing that I grew up with. This, when you grow up with a sick parent, I think you always have this alarm, this precaution, because you never know what's going to happen. And it does sometimes happen that you're in a party and you phone home to see if everything is okay, because we didn't have mobiles, and they tell you, come home. You have to come home because dad is in the hospital. So you always grow up with a little thing in your head.
Interesting.
Of being aware.
And that happened? That you would call home and you said, he's sick, you've got to go home?
Yeah.
That's a very deep thing, because it gives you a real awareness of mortality
at a very young age.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think not so much now, because I'm going to turn 50. For 35 happy years of my life, there hasn't been any deaths around me, touch wood.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always there, because I was born into this world where someone could drop dead any minute. And when I was 8 years old, my 2 aunts died in a car crash.
Mm.
So, 8 or 9, no, sorry, I was 10, I think, 10
but
years
young.
Old. So that really kind of defined me as a person. That was a very, very distinct thing that you have and no one else has.
Mm-hmm. That's 2 things then. You had the otherness of being a half and half, and then you had this relationship with death and threatening
with
death.
With death, yeah, it was very close. I always had this feeling of death being super close. And then my godfather died, and it was like, okay, this happens. This is, and then suddenly no one dies, and I'm thinking, this is really strange. Who's
nobody,
this is not normal. Someone has to die.
Isn't
you know,
somebody
it's been
supposed
2 years.
To die? That's, and so, and on the third thing I'll say, just from knowing you and hanging out with you, is that you are basically an introverted person who has also an impulse to spend your life in public in a way, or on stage. So as a kid, were you a natural performer?
As a kid, we spent our summers in a little village in the middle of Spain, in Sepúlveda, a beautiful village. And we were very much the odd one out.
Mm.
So my sister and I really bonded, and we had like 3 or 4 friends that did plays and weird stuff that no other kids did. And I was the smallest of 4, which is also a very definitive personality trait, I think.
The youngest of 4 siblings, the baby.
Yeah, the baby of, and my oldest brother's 10 years older than me. So I listened to music that wasn't my, you know, I have musical references that are not my generation at all.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I was super happy. I did ballet. I loved dancing. And I was really happy. And I never felt, you know, when we did the summer dances. And I was really happy on stage.
Comfortable.
It wasn't a big deal. And I really loved doing plays in summer and putting up plays with my friends. But I wasn't particularly sociable. And I wasn't particularly inwards either. I wasn't the kind of kid that is
sitting in the corner
with a book at all.
Right. But you did tell me that you were slow to sort of become into young adultness. You'd stayed a kid for a long time.
I didn't want to grow up.
Yeah.
I remember distinctly being old enough to think, I do not want to step out of childhood yet. Yeah. I am not prepared. I do not want what is there. I can see it. I can see my brothers. I can see my sister. And I am not interested.
And what do you think that was? Why do you think that was that you didn't want to?
I think I was super comfortable in my cocoon. And I was quite lonely. I loved playing Lego. I could be like 5 hours playing Lego or playing with my dolls. And I couldn't find... I think it's because I couldn't find peers. I think if I had found people like me, I would have been comfortable. But it was like either my weird world or this super going out to clubs and flirting and drinking. And there was nothing in between. So I thought, you know, out of the two, I'm much more comfortable here.
Music? When did you start singing?
And music, I started by dancing. Then I had to stop dancing, and I had all this free time.
You had an injury or something?
Energy. Yeah, I got something that happens a lot to classical dancers with the knee. So I had to stop dancing. And I had this energy, this, you know, I had found a way of expression that didn't involve me as a person. It involved what I did. And I found some drama classes. And I just... You know, just like a little flyer of, you know, do you want to... And I think I was 14 when I started doing that.
So
and
still in your kind of girlish phase at that point.
Yeah, totally. 14, 15. And I wasn't singing. My house has always been really musical. And we always sang all the time. There was music all the time. My mom sings all the time. But I hadn't started singing then. I did a film because a director came to one of the classes and casted me for a film.
So you're 14 or 15?
I'm 16.
16.
And
you
I
get cast.
Stayed alone in Madrid in summer to do that film. It was a very low budget film. It was super arty.
So you enroll in an acting class at 14.
Yeah.
Did you get a sense that it was a natural fit for you? Like, oh, this is, I get this, I know how to do this.
But I had this feeling of, we were five in the class, and we were all like, I felt we were all the same. We were peers, we were freaks. We kind of liked going to cinemas and listening to music and...
Well, that's what I've been waiting for you to say. Literally, I've been waiting to hear you say, the artists were the freaks, and... feeling like a kind of a freak as a kid, like I'm the only half and half, there's death all around me, all this crazy stuff. Like, of course you end up gravitating to the artists, right? Because they're also the kind of the weirdos. And it makes sense when I see you interact with artists why you always want to have some freaky musicians around you in your life. Today we're hanging out in our friend Javi Peña's studio, who's I see the way you interact with him. And it's like, oh, he's comfortable. He's like kind of a weirdo like I am.
Yeah, it's a secure place. It's a comfortable place. I was thinking, I had suddenly have this flash. I think also being half English or half my mother's Englishness made me stand out in a way. Like, for example, I loved wearing hats. And I got all my clothes secondhand because I was the smallest, not only of my family, but all of my mother's friends' children. So I inherited this, you know, crazy wardrobe. And I loved that, you know, and my school supplies were from England, and I love wearing hats. And in Madrid, it was like...
Nobody wears hats?
No one. No one at all. It was standing out. And there was something in that I didn't mind and I found fun if it was with peers. If everyone was, you know, like, we are, okay, we're wearing hats and we're dressing like this, but because we like it, not because we want to stand out and make a statement.
Yes.
And I think that also kind of drew me a part of the of the group, mm-hmm. because I dressed differently, I did different things.
And did you feel that in Spain, in your generation, there was kind of a... I mean, I felt that when I came here, that there were sort of archetypes that you could be.
Very
you
strong.
Could be like a rocker, or you could be kind of a preppy person, or you could, like, there were a handful of...
And they were very strict. You couldn't be preppy and like...
Yeah, hippie.
I mean, if you liked Pet Shop Boys, you couldn't like U2. And if you liked, thinking of Spanish bands, but if you liked Mecano, you couldn't like Radio Futura. Yeah. There was all this parting and separating, and I felt really uncomfortable because I didn't feel like I fitted in any one of them, in any of the boxes. So I kind of stayed out of the boxes.
Yeah. You know, you're born in 1975.
Yeah.
It's the year that Franco died.
Yeah, three months after I was born.
So you're the first generation to basically be raised not only in whatever the democracy is here, but also as Spain is inventing itself culturally.
I don't think I had a sense of it or a knowledge of it, except probably for my older brothers. They were 10 years older. So
they
when
had a
I
memory.
Was 8, they were 18, they were going out. But if you were born here and just kind of grew into it, it wasn't that... You didn't have this feeling of...
But do you remember in school the way they talked about, like, just civics or the government or the culture? Like, did they make a big deal out of the fact that this was the Republic? Was, you know, like, that, that we weren't in dictatorship anymore, anything like that?
No, I don't recall. I was talking to a friend the other day that was born also in the year 75, and we were trying to recall if we had any memory at all of the golpe de Estado.
Coup d'etat.
Yeah. And my sister remembers, she's 4 years older than me, and we were in ballet class. So I remember what she's told me, that we were sent home. I remember my father being really worried, but I didn't know if it was because of his health or, you know.
I mean, I think
there was this feeling of ominous, something really horrible is happening. But when you grow up, everything is normal. Whatever happens is your day-to-day, so it's not...
Yeah. Okay, so you get cast. You're 16 years old.
I get cast, and I stay alone in Madrid for
the first
time.
Goes to the summer house.
My family goes to the summer house, and I do this film, which I now realize it's a really arty film, even for Spanish standards. Yeah. It's really low budget, and... I got so incredibly bored. Mm. I thought it was so boring, so unnatural, so nothing to do with acting. I was writing a lot by then, because when I got bored, I wrote. Mm. So I have lots of notebooks from that time. I just kept writing and writing and writing. That's what I did when I got bored.
What did you write?
Poems. Since I was like, I think probably death has to do with that, this feeling of having to express something that you don't know how to express. This is a time where you don't do therapy, you don't talk to kids and say, you know, how are you feeling? This is something that happens. This is a time when...
This is in the 90s.
Is 84, 85. You just walk in your house and your father's crying in one corner and it's like, okay, something major has happened and we have to deal with it. So I think that's why I started writing. And... what I recall of that filming was basically writing a lot because it was super boring, thinking, this makes no sense. Why do I have to do again a scene I've done already? I didn't understand at all the dynamics of shooting a film. But I did work with amazing actors. Mm.
Did you feel any concern that you couldn't do it, or did you think...
At that point, no.
Yeah.
I just felt it had nothing to do with me because also being low budget, it didn't have sound. So we had to dub it. And I remember thinking, this is so, everything is such a lie.
Is that why they dubbed? Because there are so many Spanish. I mean, even Pedro Almodóvar's films, some of them seem very dubbed, the early ones to me. I don't know, but like a lot of Spanish cinema, when I started coming here,
it
felt
very
dubbed.
It has to do with money in that time because it's very expensive to do
good sound.
Yeah. Sorry, I just had an image. I went to a summer camp when I was 15 and I said my name was Gus. I invented this whole persona and I sang. I remember there was someone playing the guitar.
And do you know what you sang?
Yeah. Stand By Me. And I really enjoyed performing. But it was Gus. It wasn't, you know, it was this persona I invented that was really easygoing and could sing in front of lots of people.
There are people who say they feel a kind of freedom in...
in not being...
you. And acting in a way.
I've forgotten about that summer camp completely. I got really sick.
At camp?
Yeah. I wasn't prepared to leave my house at all, but I kind of did.
But it sort of prepared you for the movie the next year.
Yeah,
then.
I think so.
So even though that movie was low budget and arty and weird, and you didn't seem to enjoy it...
Something happened. I was stung by the bug.
Yeah.
Which is something that lots of actors say, and it's absolutely true. There's a bug that stings you, and there's this microsecond where you believe another reality and you are another person, and that is intoxicating.
How do you do it? You know, this is what I keep asking. I'm alluding to this with you all the time when we're hanging out. Wow, what do you do? And we shot a music video yesterday where literally... you didn't have to be another person exactly. Yeah. We had a very sort of thinly veiled versions of ourselves that we were playing. But I just watched the way you were asked to throw some dice or deal a deck of cards. And I watched the way you did it, I realized, is the result of having paid attention to the way other people do things. Like, I just thought, oh, this is what, part of what's going on is you must have had to just watch other people go through things to get a sense of, well, what would I do in this situation? How would I, something as simple as, how would I gamble? What face would I make?
I think it's really interesting because I am not very sociable. I work well with few people.
Yeah.
If there's a lot of people, I can't handle it very well. And my partner is the opposite. He's super sociable and he feeds on that energy. And we have this joke of, I don't like people, and he loves... And it's not really true. I love people. I love sitting in a cafe and just observing watching and listening to the conversations. But I don't feel I can be a part of that. I think that's a difference.
But what you can do is interpret it later on. I mean, it all because... And interestingly, like, so your partner, Jorge, said to me once that he feels that his process is one of inhalation and exhalation, that he inhales a lot of experience and then he exhales it through the work.
Mm.
So, but he needs to take it all in. So they'll go through periods of intense experiential times and then go alone somewhere and write and get it all out. You also are sort of doing that. You're experiencing things, but from a little bit of a distance.
And you have your moments of feeding and just watching films and going to theater and reading books. And then there's a moment of kind of you full up and you cannot listen to one more song.
Mm.
And that's the moment where I start to write or I start to... And I think acting also has to do with not being yourself. I think that's the bug that really is wonderful. You stop being yourself. It's such a relief. It's like, I don't have to think what I'm going to do. I'm just inside this person that has a script written that is going to go through all this.
Yes.
So I'm going to go through all that without the real pain or consequences that life would have.
And do you think, like, some actors maybe do want to experience the pain and consequences of life in order to try to get closer to it? Or if you're a real actor, you don't need to necessarily.
I think now that's been lightened up. Mm-hmm. I think in the 70s and the 80s, the method was kind of understood in a way of, if you're going to be a drug dealer, you have to go to the streets. And I think with time, we realized you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
And the joy of being an actor is that you actually can, I mean, of course you can ask and you can get to meet a drug dealer.
Sure.
And they're super happy to talk to you. It's really funny. Everyone is really happy to tell you their stories.
Like right now you're filming something where you play a cop, you play a police officer.
Yeah.
I see every time you see a police officer, you're like, you feel like you're one of them right now.
But it's funny because we've seen so many cops and we've idealized so much what they do. And at the same time, some parts of society are really against cops and they have this whole imagery.
Yeah.
And the reality of the day to day is so tough.
Yeah.
We were doing a joke the other night. We were shooting and we were in a cop car and the radio, we had to turn it off to be able to shoot. And suddenly three
real cops,
real cop cars come rushing by. And I joked to the real cop that is on set, and I said, oh, we shouldn't have turned the radio off because we could know what's going on. There's this excitement that we've all been brought up to, you know, cops are exciting. And and he looked at me and he said, well, something really bad for sure.
Three cars
is not good. And it suddenly hit me. It's like, shit.
It's not exciting.
It's not fun. Yeah. It's not, oh my God, what's going on? Yeah. It's sad. Yeah. And that kind of insight is what I love about acting.
Yes. So you got bit by the bug, and what happened then?
And so what happened then, I went back to school, and of course, I've been on a set where I was treated like an adult, and suddenly I'm back to school, I'm back in my house where I'm the smallest of four, I'm again the kind of, and I thought, ooh, I like the world where I am trusted and
respected.
And so I started going to auditions, and I got an agent because that film director Pablo Llorca did have some weight because he was so independent. So I got an agent and I got into a TV show, and that was just fun and money. And
what show? What was the show?
It was called Hermanos de Leche. It was a 90s TV show.
Was it successful?
Yeah.
So it was fun, it was money, and it was you became known.
Very, very, no, because I didn't look like myself. So in school, and I did. I mean, for my perspective, suddenly...
You were different.
I was different.
Again,
you know, it's like,
different.
Ah, no, that's... It's funny, I took like 3 rehearsals to choose my name, because the first film I did, like... Elizabeth Watling, which is my second name and my second surname.
Yes, because you are Leonor Elizabeth
Ceballos Watling. Ceballos for me carried a lot of weight because it's my father's surname, my aunt's. They're all doctors, ingenieros de Montes, really academic. My father was an economist, and it had this... In my family, it was a big thing not to go to university. Mm. A big
and
thing.
And you didn't go.
And I didn't go. So I didn't...
So you thought you didn't earn the Ceballos?
No. And I thought they would be kind of embarrassed.
Really?
Yeah. And kind of... And so I chose Watling. And then Leonor, I never went by Leonor. I was always called Ellie for Elizabeth, Eli.
Yeah.
And so I was struggling to find who I was going to be.
So you were really Eli Ceballos. Ellie Ceballos.
Yeah.
I mean, in your life,
that's
you're Ellie
who
Ceballos.
I was, Ellie Ceballos.
And so you chose the other two, the other half.
I chose the other two. And finally, I grew into Leonor, which is a big name, but it's a beautiful name.
Yes.
But I think you have to be older. You can't be... I was really short. I didn't grow up until I was 16, 17. Uh-huh. So like, Leonor was such a massive name. To this tiny
and
girl.
And Ellie's,
walking
a, Ellie's
in.
A cute, old, smaller name.
And Ellie's cute and small.
Yeah.
Now, Ellie, for example, for me, is really strange because it's kind of the remnants of a time past. Almost no one calls me Ellie.
Yeah.
I think...
Family,
I'm Leo now. Yeah. I'm kind of growing into Leo.
Interesting. I mean, what I find with Ellie is that if anybody refers to you as Ellie, it gives me a sense that they have... Well, my takeaway from it is that there's a feeling of... It's not intimacy, but of kind of closeness to you.
Yeah, but it's a double, because people, I think I loved that name until it came out somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, now people...
And people that I didn't know suddenly said Ellie, and that felt so invasive. It was like this intimate name, and I think that's why kind of I looked for another name to protect myself.
Yeah.
Because it felt really strange to be kind of out in a place full of people and suddenly hear this...
Very personal.
Very personal, very secure name. And you look around and it's someone you don't know. And it's like, oh, shit. This is really not nice.
Well, I mean, that's a factor in your life. I've been poking at it with you because it's not something that I experience. You know, I grew up... in a smaller city that you've been to, in Madison. And I was, as Amanda always calls me, a big fish in a small pond. So I was sort of like known in my city, but not famous. My dad isn't famous. I mean, he's known and respected in a world.
Uh-huh.
But that world is quite small.
But you weren't Ben's.
No, I'm definitely Ben-son. I mean, people still call me Ben sometimes, but whatever. It's not. I don't get stopped on the street. I never get stopped on the street. Every now and then, and I love it.
And your father?
I mean, I have memories as a child of walking, for example, through airports and people stopping him, but they were all other musicians or people in the music industry who he had worked with. It was almost never.
That's nice. That's a nice.
It's a great amount of.
That's a great
respect of your peers in your community. Every now and then, maybe somebody would be like, oh, you know, they had seen his TV show or something. But because he's not in mainstream popular culture, he was like a representative of the jazz world, which has never been mainstream.
No.
Whereas you enter into a space where, I mean, certainly by the time I got to Spain in 97, 98, I think I became aware of your band a couple years after that, 99 or 2001 was the first record.
2002, 2003.
Oh, really?
We started writing songs around 98, 99.
Yeah.
And we finally brought out the record, I think it was 2002.
Oh, so maybe my time frame is a little off. Because what I remember was, and I mentioned this to you in another interview that we did, Ben and I went down to Malaga to this thing called La Música Contada, which was a festival, and we didn't overlap, but you were there the week before us or something.
That was our first big concert.
Really?
Yeah.
And I remember reading your biography and realizing that I had seen you in film, and then you were also a singer, and that's when I sort of noticed that you were making music.
That's really crazy, because I think of it now, and I look at actresses that are the age I was and in the place I was. And to do that is a really bold move. I'd already worked with Almodóvar. I had a place in this in the film world, and suddenly I go out on a limb and we put out this record. Alejandro Pelayo, Oscar Ibarra, who's he came from New York, the trumpet player, and we did it in a very particular way, because when we started moving the maqueta, songs around, I understand it was really yummy for our AR, you know, to say
label,
we have this. Not even listening to her music, but it's a great product to sell. You have this actress that now has a record. Doesn't matter what the music is. And I was very, very adamant about that. I did not want to take pictures alone. It was always the three of us. It had to be the three of us. It had to be, and it was in English. It wasn't super mainstream music. And we ended up in this really independent record label, Subterfuge, because they said, you do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And now I look at it. Man, this is my name. Man, this is the game I won't play with you. Madness is the kiss I will give to you, wrapped in silver and night in you.
Well, from a career standpoint, maybe it didn't make sense, although maybe it did, because it gave you a lot. One thing that it gave you permission to do, or that you asserted, was, I'm going to do, just to prepare yourselves, people, I'm going to do things that you might not expect.
Yeah, I think of it a lot when they say, you know, why don't you publish a book?
Yeah.
You've been writing for 40 years. Why don't you publish something? And I'm too scared to publish. So I think it has to do with when you do something that you need to put out.
Yeah.
Because if not, it just bites your ankles and is
and that's how
nagging
you,
and that's how you feel. Yeah. I think when you put something out is because there is you can't not do it.
Yes,
more than this idea of I'm going to do a record. I'm going to do it's something that you do, and then you need to let go. And just
but so there is a difference for you in that case between taking an acting gig, because I mean I'm sure that there have been times in your career. I mean
where I had to choose.
You have to work. Hmm. I mean, one of the challenges I think of being an actor, particularly an actress, is that you have to work. And as you said to me yesterday, if a project works, you're celebrated as the thing that made it work. And if it fails, you're blamed for. But ultimately, you actually don't have a lot of control over the fate of an acting project.
Not at all.
But you have to work. You know, I mean, this is your livelihood. This isn't just, it's not only art and it's not only expression.
No, it's what pays,
you do.
Yeah, the more, the more the school and everything. So you have to work. I think also I did have this very clear image of, I don't want to be only an actress. I don't know what it can be, but I cannot be only an actress.
And why was that, do you think?
And that was because I started to work very young and I saw what it was like. And it's really hard. And you depend on that. You know, they're calling, they're not calling. You go to castings, they don't cast you. It's a lot of no's.
Yeah.
And then when you get casted, you're really happy. And maybe it's a shitty film and then you're not so happy. And then it's a very complicated life. And I thought, I can't see myself only doing this.
So it does seem, though, that the inflection point for you as an actress, and maybe I'm wrong, because I don't really know what preceded it, but it seemed like the inflection point was Talk to Her.
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, in Spain, it was probably a TV thing I did called Raquel Busca Su Sitio, which was very popular. And television is much more, it kind of permeates to everyone.
Interesting. More people.
Films, not so much. You can do really brilliant films, and people may not recognize you in the street because television is just there. It's in your living room, you're watching it in your pajamas, and the next day you see the person in the street. So it's a different kind of fame.
Yes. You've been in their house.
Mm. And that was intense. That was very intense.
Raquel.
Yeah, and I didn't enjoy it very much. That fame, I mean, I enjoyed the work.
Yeah.
That kind of fame was very oppressive. And then I did this film with Pigas Luna, who's a very respected filmmaker. And that kind of took me out of television and into the film world again. And that, and I was in a really good place. And then Pedro called and just took it to this international possibility.
And did you feel that? I mean, I know that there were times when you must have considered going to LA or to London or leaving Spain.
I tried to go to London. Again, I was very depressed with the weather. I have a very strange accent and I don't look Latin.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, I mean, they kept saying here in Spain, why don't you go and do, you know, an international career? And I said, because I am in the same position as 2 million actors in the States. I don't look Latin.
Yeah. Right, so compared to somebody like Penelope, for example, where it's like...
Or Paz Vega, or...
They have thick Spanish accents, which almost would serve you better in a way.
I think she's a creature of her own. She's incredible. And she's such a hard worker. I mean, she's done films in French, in English, and she's very strong. Yeah. She can go and be alone in a hotel for 3 months.
Mm.
I'm not strong. I smelt it. Mm. I was in LA and I thought, I'm not this strong. Mm. I can't, this is not going to end well if I pursue it. So if things are easy and they pay for my ticket and I'm taken care of, I go wherever in the world. Yeah. If I have to fight for it, I'm not that strong.
Mm.
Hmm. And it's good to realize it.
Yeah.
I think it's very important because at that age, I think I was 26.
This is after you worked with Pedro. This
27, was... 27, 28. Yeah. And it's obvious for everyone around you. It's, go to LA, go to London. You know, this is the moment. And I think it was very important to me to be able to say, I can't do it. I can't.
So my career will be here. My career will be closer to home.
I mean, I did films in Canada, in Ecuador. If they call me and they take me there, I'm fine. But you have to be very strong to go out there and pursue your dream.
Yeah. I totally get that. And it's interesting, you know, I have to admit, I think when I went to Malaga and I read about you, and I was on tour with my father, and I hadn't really done a lot of my own work. I mean, I had been making records, but they weren't really...
I think you had two records
I did have two
one
records.
One in Spanish?
Yes.
So I think we have a very kind of parallel...
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Looking for ourselves in different...
We do have something else in common, which is that I felt quite different for different reasons, but I was like... wanted to be normal and also was proudly not normal.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I relate to that.
And I think in your way, like, you learned how to be normal by acting. Like, this is what the experience of people, other people, real people is like. And I still don't necessarily. I mean, in some ways, I think even talking to people, interviewing them, is my way of trying to. Well, what is it like to be another person? You know, what is your life like?
Yeah.
But in my case, I grew up in a city where nobody else had a professional musician as a parent,
right?
Or certainly not somebody who had a career like an international career who traveled the world. So I would go off, and I'm an only child, so I would be taken around the world to meet wonderful musicians and artists and be in incredible places, and then go back to my school. And
who do you share that with?
Who can you share that with? Who
right.
could possibly...
It's impossible.
So that led to some isolation, which for me meant that I spent my adolescent years locked in my little recording studio in my parents' house writing songs. I came out in that kind of writing for me. But it's funny because what I was going to say is when I became aware of you as a musician, and I remember reading your bio and seeing that you had this project, and I remember thinking to myself, almost like that I was embarrassed that I was still so tied to my father's career. And that, you know, I should really be doing something more independent for myself. You know, I went through a period of insecurity where I thought, this is humiliating. Look at, here's Leonor,
really?
We're the same age,
no
and look
way.
At everything. But when I met you, what I discovered is you're also deeply tied to your family. Like at the end
yeah.
of the day, part of what wasn't going to work for you, I think, about going to L.A.
That
is
also, yeah.
to be so far from your mother and
yeah.
so far from your sister, who are, I think, probably the closest people in your life.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, that also wouldn't work
yeah.
for me. But it's interesting, this perception
yeah.
of success in other people.
Yes.
And I think in our
yeah.
professions, well, funnily enough, I think now everyone has that
yeah.
with social media. But I think in our professions, we've had it always, this, oh my God, look what he's doing.
Yeah.
Why am I not, how old is he? He's like, you know, that is always, and in acting, for example, and he's doing another film. Why did he call those actors and not, does anything I do have any impact in that? Can I do something to change that? Can I?
I agree. We're constantly paying attention. It's brutal,
hmm.
and it's also inspiring.
And also, you have the other side of
yeah.
you know this record, and you kind of feed on a record.
Yeah.
I think I've listened to, I don't know, for example, In Rainbows
yeah.
by Radiohead, or Jazzmatazz
yeah.
or Suzanne Vega.
Yeah.
I think I fed on them
yeah.
as much as I fed on food. I think music has lots of pockets.
Mm.
So you can, I mean, it's like a smell. There's a song that if you listen to that song, it will hit you
yeah.
and make you travel in time.
Yes.
But also it can have a second life.
Yeah.
Something can happen
yeah.
that suddenly it's big coat and it has another big pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I found that with my kids, that suddenly there was another big pocket for Jazzmatazz.
Mm.
And my son loves Jazzmatazz.
Yeah.
So suddenly it was the music of when he was 3-4 years old,
yeah.
you know, so they have, I think they have infinite
yeah.
lives.
It's not just the one time.
Mm.
So did you, by the way, Pedro, did you ever work with him again?
No, I did a small part in his following movie
uh-huh.
and then I've never worked with him. He's starting a film now and I'm like,
well, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, so do you think that sometimes there are those who are just more shameless about pursuing, like saying, hey,
probably,
man, I want to work
yeah.
with you, or you know.
I don't know if it works.
Yeah,
I've
I don't know.
I've tried
either.
To.
Have you?
Yeah, I think when I got when I got pregnant the first time, I was really panicked, and I thought I'm never going to work again. This is it. You know, it's over. And in a kind of rush of.
Yeah.
whatever hormone, I sent messages saying, you know, just so you know, I would love to work with you again.
But what's wrong with that, though?
Nothing is wrong, but I understand also the pressure directors must feel with actors.
Yeah.
I think it's a very difficult for them to be friends with actors
mm.
because of that. And I felt this with musicians when I had my musical project. It's very difficult to have a friend musician that is a bass player and not call him for your record or for your tour. And why? It's like nothing to do with you. It's
for any number of factors.
You are as yeah. good as the one we
yeah.
hired, but it's just a thousand factors
yeah.
that made us
yeah.
go another way. So I feel for them. I feel it must be really exhausting
yeah.
to have actors tell you, hi.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe to some extent, like you say, that's why having a musical project was so helpful for you, because
it saved my mental health.
Because something you're putting out in the world, you're not waiting for anyone to approve it.
And it made me understand everything from the other side, you know, because acting, you are taken and told what to do, and you have a big place of creation, but for you, but in the big picture, that space of creation is not that big.
Yes.
And you have to be happy with that. Yeah. You have to come to terms with that and rejoice in your little garden and say, you know, it's going to be the most beautiful garden I can do, but it's not a massive savanna. You can't, you know, say what the music is going to be, what the editing is going to be, what anything.
It's a deep thing. I mean, the more I think about it, I suppose being a session musician is like that too.
I mean, I felt for musicians, I mean, I wouldn't call them session musicians because we always worked with musicians that we would go on tour later. Yeah. But we did have, and there is this feeling of, you know, what you did is really beautiful, but it's not for this song.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to use it.
Yeah.
But don't feel bad because it's, you know.
Right, and we didn't
know.
Thank
you for what you offered.
Yeah.
Keep it.
And that's a little bit like being cut out of a scene.
And that's being an actor and saying, you know, thank you so much for your, you know, what you acted, but we want her character to be really, really kind of going another way.
Right, we're going to do something different.
So I think music made me understand that in a beautiful way.
Yeah.
In a way that wasn't hurtful as an actor.
Yes. So you mentioned this thing about when you got pregnant the first time, and your oldest is 16 now, so it's, you're with, 35?
Yeah, I was 33.
33. And how real was that? That idea that now that I'm a mother, I'm not going to be able to work in the same way.
Massive.
And was it true? Did it turn out to be true?
No. No, I worked much better and much more after I had my kids. But I think we share, all women share this. It's this thing of, well, a part of the whole body, massive, crazy changing. And there's this feeling of your life stopping. And in a sense, it does. Your life as you knew it stops. And you go into another road, another highway, and there is a massive, and for a woman, you as an actress, I know actresses that don't get, you don't notice that they're pregnant until they're 9 months old. I was pregnant from day one. Eyelashes were pregnant. it was all pregnancy all around. I couldn't work. I did work, actually. I did two films when I was pregnant.
Wow.
And you think, you know, this is never going to happen again. A year is a long time in film world.
Well, I remember years ago when we were talking about maybe doing a project with my dad for you, and I think it was something like in November we got together and talked about maybe working, and Ben said, okay, well, why don't we block out a week in May or June? And you said, I can't possibly commit to May or June. I can't know what my May or June is going to look like. And I realized, like, your life happens a month
That's really hard for partners of actors and aspiring musicians, because, you know,
you have to book ahead of time.
I think with a solid career, you can plan and you can design your gigs
a little bit.
But if not, if you're a middle class musician, it's always day to day. It's like, oh, next month. You can't buy a plane ticket for next August, because maybe in July they call you. And I think that's freelance life.
In general. But so to take a year away just felt like it
that
was...
That felt crazy.
So what ended up happening was you had a band for a long time.
What ended up happening was I started singing with some friends. Then I joined a choir. I realized I really liked singing. I started singing with some friends, and we got together on Sundays, and we just played versions.
Did you notice that you had an unusual voice, or there was something about your voice that was...
No, but I just really enjoyed it. I was really, really happy singing. I was backup singer for a band, soul band, for a few gigs, and that was fun.
Yeah.
And being backup singer, I thought was really fun, because you
didn't... That's kind of a role, though. That's a little bit like being an actor in a way, like you play the role of backup singer.
Yeah, it was really fun. And then in this group where we played, the piano player, who's an artist, actually, he's a painter, broke his arm. And just that week, a friend of a friend had arrived from New York, and that is Alejandro Pelayo. Uh-huh. he had come back from Juilliard. And I said, you know, do you want to come and play with us? And there the seed planted in my head of, this guy is really good playing the piano. Why don't we do a set and I can maybe go to Café Central or places like that and get like a, you know, like a monthly job, yeah. like a regular thing. I can do this. This can be my ground job. And then acting can happen. And that's how it started. And Alejandro said, you know, for me, it's as hard to do a version of a standard as it is to do an original song. You have like 20,000
poems,
notebooks yeah. full of words for songs. So why don't we write songs? And that's how it started.
And it worked. And you named it Marlango because you misunderstood a Tom Waits lyric?
We did. I did, actually. I did. Alejandro and I really, really loved. It was one of our, because we have very different tastes mm-hmm. in music, but there's kind of a common place, and Tom Waits is a very big Frank Sinatra, Tom Waits. Good. And there was this concert in Sydney, and it was, you know, that time when there were tapes yeah. of, you know, pirate concert. Yeah. And he talked about a girl called Susie Marlango that wore angora, and she wore angora sweaters, and she had a brother called Joe Marlango that had a band. And when Alejandro and I started playing with this idea, we thought, you know, Marlango is such a beautiful word. It works in English, it works in Spanish, it's
yeah.
mushy. And many years later, I was lucky enough to interview Tom Waits. And at the end of the interview, I said, you know, I have this band, and it's called Marlango because of, you know,
Susie Marlango.
And there was this silence. And I thought, well, you know, this was a long time ago. He probably doesn't remember saying yeah. that in a gig. And he said, oh, no, wait, Susie Montelongo. And it was Montelongo.
Which is actually much less
musical.
Well, and also sounds more Montelongo.
Sounds like a wine.
Yeah, Montelongo.
Like a vineyard, Montelongo
yeah.
wine.
Yeah. yeah.
And he was very, very graceful about it. And he said, you know, inspiration always comes from mistakes, from yeah. errors, from yeah. understanding something that is not yeah. what was meant to be said. And I said, thank you so much.
I mean, it's totally yours. It's your work.
Yeah.
You invented it.
It's yeah. great.
So you and Alejandro, for a time, were both creative and personal partners.
Yeah. We started playing, and we got involved,
yeah.
and we lived together for 3 years.
Yeah.
And actually, the project started when we separated, which is something I do not recommend. It's very hard. That first record was very hard. I think it was very hard for everyone. For musicians around us, for, you know, you're arguing about, what was it, derechos de autor.
Yeah, yeah, rights.
Rights, and everything is in that mix, and everything. And that was, but lots of songs came out of there, because we did the second record in like 6 months.
Yeah. And you ended up you made a record in LA, you worked with you worked over the years with incredible guests,
yeah.
and, you know, it really was a very, not only successful, but impressive
The first
project.
Record, I mean, we really, really put it out thinking, you know, music in English, kind of jazzy, not
yeah.
jazz,
yeah.
but it has a trumpet,
yeah.
it's not very pop.
Yeah.
And we got a golden record, and it was this massive success.
Yeah.
Once upon that time, I was with you.
If I had it now, I would really enjoy it.
Yeah.
At that moment, I was just struggling to... I remember shooting films and getting in a car and going to play. And I was just trying to do everything as well as I could, but very stressed.
Wow.
And we went to Japan,
yes.
and we toured around Germany, and it was... We did the second record. In the studio for the first record, we were already writing
right,
songs
right.
for the second record. And then... Our little label sold us to Universal,
yeah.
to this big label. And I think we were playing in really big places, and I think you feel you need songs to fill those spaces.
Sure.
So we were writing that, which doesn't necessarily mean it's what we would have been writing
yeah.
if we had stopped and thought.
There are children hanging on the lamppost, pretending they are trees. They can climb up and fall down hard on their knees into this grass built for them. This puzzle made of dreams and nightmares, full of shops and signs, old and lives behind the curtains. Every ruling conversation. Sometimes, somehow, moon finds a cradle, then traffic lights and it works out. It works out. There.
And you also eventually switched from writing in English to writing in Spanish. And it seems like English was a safe place for you.
Very. I had a terrible time. That came from going to and playing in Mexico and Argentina and with Fito Páez. And actually, he looked at me and said, listen, Leonor, this is like if I played piano with just one hand.
Yeah.
You're bilingual.
Yeah.
And you're not using one of your languages.
Yeah.
And I thought, that is so true.
Yeah.
And that is so stupid of me. And actually, Spanish is very difficult. I mean, in a practical way, it's very difficult. English, you have all the verbs. You can make verbs out of nouns. You have so many monosyllables. You can put a beat, a word for each beat. You don't have to think of metrics or uncomfortable sounds like R's or
Ñ's.
Ñ's, T's. So,
fetas.
So it is. I mean, not only it's you have to write lyrics that you're proud of, but also you have to make them fit in the melody that you designed.
Yeah.
And that in English for me wasn't hard. I mean, it was hard. I always went into the studio with five notebooks saying,
yeah,
I haven't finished the words.
Yeah.
No, I have to change this. This
yeah.
could be so much better. But that in Spanish turned to torture. I always had fever. I was like, and also I was with Jorge at that time. I was starting with Jorge, who's like one of the best lyric writers in Spanish. And that doesn't help.
I'm sure.
And we did six records in English and three in Spanish. No, how many
did you make? Did you make nine records?
No, we have seven records. I think we did four in English, three in Spanish. We went to do one in LA.
Yeah.
With Sebastian Chris
yeah.
as a producer.
And Pete Thomas playing drums.
It was really amazing.
I forgot that, like, you sang with Rufus Wainwright and you sang, you had some really big guests.
You every question. You every question.
But I think we were starting to lose kind of, we were starting to play smaller gigs. And the record label said, you know, we're going to do this really massive investment in you. You're going to go to LA, you're
yeah.
going to do this record with Sebastian Chris,
yeah.
and you're going to tour Mexico and Argentina. And it didn't come out the way they expected.
Mm.
I think they really wanted like a hit record,
yeah.
and it didn't work out like that.
And this was a project that was never designed to be for you to be about hits necessarily.
No, I mean, I wouldn't mind at all.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I mean, if it happened, it would have been super welcomed,
yeah.
but it wasn't the purpose.
Yeah.
And we realized that when we did that record,
yeah.
because the songs were removed from our natural
mm-hmm.
place. And so the next record, we produced ourselves and we did ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think it's the best
one
we did
Uma?
In Spanish.
Is that the one with Uma?
Produced with
yeah.
Uma.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best one we did in Spanish.
Yeah.
That's the most close to
yeah.
the nature of our composing.
Yes.
In Marlango is that last one in Spanish.
Si te vas, vete bien lejos, donde no te pueda oler. Si te vas, llévate a alguien que te pueda defender. Si te vas, busca guarida donde no te pueda ver. Llevo el alma bien herida y no hay arma más mortal.
But at a certain point, you're playing smaller venues, mm-hmm. whatever, things drift apart. You know, you talked about how you worked as an actress. It went well after you had your kids. But I also remember, and maybe hearing this even from Jorge, if not from you, that as a female actress, there is a little bit of a turning point in your life where you go from being the ingenue to playing the mother, you know what I mean? And you have this little middle space where you're not old enough and you're not young enough and there are no roles. Mm. You have to sort of wait to get old enough to...
It's changed a lot. Uh-huh. And I've been really lucky because it's been changing to my age pace.
Yes, so interesting.
I'm really lucky.
Because now you have there are a lot of roles.
When I was 30, there weren't roles for 45.
Yeah.
There weren't any roles.
Yeah.
But now, when I was 40, there were lots of roles. When I was 45, there were lots of roles. And now I'm going to turn 50 and they exist. It doesn't mean I'm going to get them, but they exist.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I was wondering if at some point music was a safe space for you as the acting came and went, but it doesn't sound like that was an issue.
No, in fact, I've this has happened a lot. I work in acting to be able to pay for music.
Well, yeah, welcome to
We're doing that right now.
Yes, exactly.
And it's really great that this can happen. And also it happens the other way around. If I'm not getting any roles that I like or I'm... Because it also happens if you work a lot.
Yeah.
At least for me, there's a moment if you do 2-3 projects, I really need to stop. Yeah. I really need to get back to my real life.
Yes.
And music helped in that sense. It's like I'm not staying at home. I'm not stopping. I'm doing another stuff.
So you came to me a year and a half ago.
Yep.
And we've been singing together when I would come to town, and I always invited you to come and sing a song. We learned a few of my songs. I guess we'd been flirting with an idea of doing something with my dad years ago, so there was something out there. But Marlango has been sort of parked for a little while, and you haven't been working with Alejandro recently. And you came to a show that I played with these French musicians that I work with, and you said, let's do something together. Hmm. And I mean, my memory is in that moment, I just said, we'll call it Leo and Leo. I don't know, or had we said that name before?
No, I don't think so. I think we laughed about it in Vitoria when we played with Javi Peña Trio and the Groovy French Band and the Leos.
Yeah, and the Leos, Leo, yeah. And one thing led to another, and it became a reality. And I mean, I have to say, for me, it has been, first of all, an total joy. Like, I can't think of a time.
For me, too. It's been so easy. Natural,
touching wood, yeah.
For me, I mean, my side of the story is I listen to your records a lot, and I go to see you and sing with you. And suddenly that night in Café Central, there was this power in the Groovy French Band, and you were, and I thought, I haven't heard these songs. They're not recorded like this.
Yeah,
they're recorded very elegantly.
Yeah,
and I haven't been able to write a song for almost 1.5 years, and it's really, really taking a toll on my self-worth, because not being able to write, I mean, there's this fear of the blank page, but if it goes on and on and on, and it's linked to singing, suddenly it's like, if I can't write, I can't sing.
Mm-hmm.
I miss singing. I love your songs. Let's do this where
this is a way
I sing
to bring
your songs. And it's a way of maybe finding, again, my step in writing.
Yes. It's a way to bring music back into your
life.
Exactly. I mean, it actually makes me so happy when I think about that. Because, and we always say this to each other, there is something very balanced about the project. Mm. I just feel like we've found all these wonderful ways to
accommodate
each
other. I love
the
way we ended up. Because the first idea was you were going to produce the record with your songs and I was going to sing.
Yeah.
And then it's like, why don't we sing together just a couple of songs? And then, and it's grown naturally into Leo and Leo.
Yes.
You
know,
I like that.
And to write something. I mean, my first thought was we must write together, you know, and you said, and at that moment, that first moment, you said to me, I don't think we need to. I don't know that I even, I think maybe it's the fear of the, I don't know if I can write right now. Don't put that on me. I don't want any pressure to write. So I love that the one proper song that we wrote, which is the single that comes out with the record, is a song that we wrote mostly over WhatsApp.
Yeah, in summer. I remember exactly because my daughter was watching a film in the house and I was in the garden And it was a scary film. So yeah. It was like, I had to go in.
Yeah.
It's like, just give me a second. I'm writing with Leo. I'll come in and watch it with you.
I love that. But also for me, you know, you had a phrase that started it, and then I wrote a thing. And then musically, we sort of agreed that that was the right direction. But then you said, well, I don't want it to be so dark. I want it to be a story about people and they fall in love. And you had this whole scenario.
She's seen it all before. He's used up every line. Neither's expecting more than a glass of decent wine.
But this isn't like he thought, and this isn't what she planned. They both pretend they don't, but deep down they understand.
I never write like that. You know, I'm actually generally, I'm trying to get to some like truth of myself in a way. I think that's like.
Me too.
But when you're writing with somebody else or for somebody else, it's much easier to go, okay, let's see what this becomes.
It's a different place. You go to a different, it doesn't have to do
with me.
Yourself.
Yeah.
So it was fun. It was kind of.
It's a little bit like Gus came back, like Gus from summer camp.
Yes,
who's,
yeah.
It's like, okay, well, this isn't my story.
Exactly.
This is a story that we're writing. And it is also interesting to be in a male-female, female-male duo where in no time am I trying to make this feel like we are a couple or singing love songs to each other.
No, it's really interesting that for whatever reason, I think it's really lucky.
Yeah.
There's not that energy, and I think that's really lucky because it's, and we're super, I think we're both very careful with the other one.
Totally.
I feel that every time we're going to say something that, you know, it's like, maybe do this song a little bit faster. So, you know, there's never, that is beautiful. It's like this, and it just, a part of the fact that you are a workaholic and that it is really great because I'm a very distracted and messy person. So the fact that you're so organized and, you know, we have to do this and you do it.
No, I am.
You know, if you're going to do something, you do it.
Yeah.
And that is great.
Yeah. Oh, well, I love that. Let's talk about a couple of the songs on Leo and Leo, because by the time this is being heard, the record is coming out and so people can listen to the songs.
And it will be a massive
hit. It'll be, people will be singing along. I mean, one thing that's interesting to me is seeing how it's going to work in Spain, where I know it's going to work one way because you have more access in Spain.
Yeah.
People are very curious. They haven't heard a record from you in a long time. You have fans. You have
musically,
presence.
It's not far from Marlango, from the first records of Marlango. So I think it's also, it's not, I'm not rapping.
You
it's
know,
not
somebody
this.
Came up to me this week at the Café Central where I was playing, and they said, we heard the first single from Leo and Leo, and we said, oh, it's like she's back at the first record.
It is that feeling a little bit for me too. It's kind of reconnecting with what made me want to.
Yeah.
I think it happens when you're in a band that you move with the other person and the other person moves with you.
Yeah.
And sometimes you end up in a place super far away
from where you started,
which is not a bad place, but it's like, wait.
How do we get here?
Let's go back to what I know I love and where I really thrive and I enjoy it and I don't suffer singing.
Yes.
Because sometimes as a composer, I was a real bitch with myself as a singer.
Yeah.
I would write songs that I knew I was going to suffer live. But it was like, I like it.
Yeah.
So
it's what it is.
Suck it up.
No, I get that. Well, it'll be interesting to see if this evolves and what it is. I mean, as with everything on the project, we just don't know. We're taking it one step at a time, including the repertoire and the way we made it. So some of the songs were challenging for me to cover. Because, you know,
I never asked you about that. How was it? Let it go, or let it go to a different place, or
it was such a cool challenge. I wanted to make something arrangements and it to sound like its own thing, but I also wanted it to sound like if you never heard my original version of it, that it was as I loved it as much as the first time.
Exactly.
So for somebody that had heard the originals, they would say, oh, they changed it. They did a new thing.
But they didn't.
But they didn't take it so far away from whatever the spirit was.
Yeah.
So there were some songs like The Art of Conversation and What's Trending, which were the title tracks to my previous two records. And each of those, like, the original versions had very specific production, and you know, you had said to me, your albums are kind of like very precious, or like little
very perfect.
I felt
like they were dressed up for a Sunday mass.
Yeah, exactly. Tucked in, the shirts tucked in, and so those were two where I think they really drifted away from the original in a way that I love, because they came alive. And The Art of Conversation, I was like, oh wow, this is a fun, danceable song now.
But that's what we feel when we heard you sing live.
Yeah.
That you ruffled the hair of the kid.
Yeah.
Like, just go run, you know, just have fun.
Simple statement man. A thoughtful commentary is all that is required to establish a rapport. A clever turn of phrase. Your vocabulary, and genuine desire to know a little more.
And it's cool to see that songs can live in multiple ways, and that there are, in some interviews I've done with people who wrote hits, they talk about knowing that they had a hit and having to work it until they made the hit version of it, you know, recording versions of songs 2 and 3 and 4 times until they got it right. Suzanne Vega has talked about this with Luca, that she said they spent 2 years recording Luca.
I was surprised with that, because it felt so...
But the producers said, no, we've got to get this right. So I know there are ways to make hits, but we're not necessarily making a hit, we're just making something we like. Maybe it'll be a hit.
I'd love to have, I mean, we could be a one-hit wonder.
Oh, I'm ready.
I'm ready.
At 50 to be
I'm
a one?
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
But it's interesting what you say, because that, our experience in LA when we did that record, and Sebastian Chris, who's an amazing, amazing guy.
Yeah, producer.
Amazing producer, incredible. I love him very much. He's really amazing. Yeah. And he knows how to do this.
Yeah.
And so he kind of kept coming back with the songs and saying, you need a C, you need a bridge, you need... And I listened to that record, and the songs are really good, and they're very well-rounded. And for the first time, I had someone helping me with the words, with the lyrics, Jimena. And I felt so detached. I felt like I was acting. I felt like it was a film. It was great, but it wasn't mine.
Yeah. But do you feel that on this project?
No.
That's what's so interesting. So it's not even about whether you wrote the lyrics.
I feel like when we sing versions, for example, like when Marlango sang Pena, Penita, Pena.
Si en el firmamento poder yo tuviera esta noche negra, lo mismo que un pozo con un cuchillito de luna lunera, cortaría los hierros de tu calabozo.
Define acting. There's like two things for it. One, acting in the truth, finding the truth.
Yeah.
And doing versions for me is as natural as playing Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. You
There's
don't
a truth
stop
in it.
Playing Shakespeare because Olivier played it so well. No actor is going to do it as good, so no one does Hamlet again.
Yeah.
You find your truth there and you play it. And then there's kind of the negative thing of acting when I say like, you know, you feel detached. You feel like you're told. You stand there and wear those clothes, and you're that character.
Yes.
And you think, okay, I can do it.
Yeah.
But it's not
me.
Yes.
Yes.
And with the versions or singing your songs, it feels more like reenacting. Like you know, finding my truth in those words, which sometimes is easier than finding, because you don't, when you write your words, you're very exposed.
Very exposed.
And sometimes you hide yourself.
Well, this is why I think my records are so perfect, because I'm covering up my blemishes.
It makes sense.
You know?
And when you write, how much of yourself are you going to give away?
Yeah.
And I think when you're singing a version, you can really go into the truth of that song.
And give yourself.
Because I didn't write it, you know?
So some songs, you brought life to them that they needed. One of the songs to me is Light, is the song Light, Light,
so
Light.
Beautiful.
which is such a meaningful song to me. But when I hear it in your voice, I think, yeah, that is how that song is supposed to sound. I feel so fortunate that the song got another chance in your voice.
Take whatever might weigh you down. Take whatever might pull you low. Take whatever might keep you bound. Take it all and then let it go.
It looks very simple,
yes.
And the words look very simple,
yeah.
But it hits
yeah.
something when you sing it right.
It's hard to sing it right, and so I feel like such a privilege to get to hear a song like that come to new life.
Qué bueno.
The other one that we wrote, that I think of us as having written, I think I wrote it, but I feel like we wrote it, is It's Never Too Late.
You wrote it.
It's not too late to get behind the wheel.
I guess I wrote it.
It's not too late to take a drive.
But I wrote it for you.
It's not too late to get behind the wheel. It's not too late to come alive. It's never too late.
Yeah, because I had just had my driving license
yes.
exam and I passed it. And
yes.
you wrote, it's not too late
yeah,
to learn to drive.
But there were some like Entre Chien et Loup, which was just made for us, I felt like.
And we've been singing it
yeah, together.
Many times
yeah.
together.
Another lighted cigarette, another glass of wine. Another long lost novel, read between the lines. Another veil is lifted between me and you. Entre Chien et Loup.
Speak to me in circles, speak to me in rhymes. Tell me every secret, confess your every crime. Just say something pretty, no matter if it's true.
But Wake Up So-So, for example.
Oh, now that one, that's a great point. Wake Up So-So is a song that I sang to my daughter in the pandemic. And it was like so many of my songs from that period were written in bed with her, with the guitar, where I would just take a guitar to bed with her, either to wake her up in the morning or to put her to bed.
Wake up so-so. Lift your sleeping head. Wake up so so. Lift your sleeping head. The sun is on the rise now and the moon's about to go. Yesterday is over and tomorrow we don't know. So wake up so so. It's time to start the show.
What's Trending was written in bed also with her, where
because really?
Yes, I mean, you know, she's lying in bed and I've got the acoustic guitar and I'm singing her a song and I start singing, teasing her because she would tell me what's trending.
I know what you need to think. I know how you need to walk. I know what you need to drink. I know how you need to talk. And even if you try to say that I'm pretending, I do it anyway. Because it's trending. It's trending.
I love trending. That song. It's so Blossom Dearie.
It's
Gershwin.
I'm hip. It's basically a response to the song that Blossom Dearie sang called I'm Hip.
I'm hip.
And
I'm so hip. La 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 la.
I know
la,
what's
la,
trending.
La, la.
It's like the 21st century version of
yeah.
I'm Hip. But Wake Up So-So was a song that I started singing to her because her nickname when she was little was So-So. And I loved playing it with you because we had been playing it live.
Yes.
She had trouble with it.
She was not comfortable.
She just didn't understand.
I apologize, soul.
She didn't understand. And the trick for me on that eventually that I love that we did on the record was to take it away from the original feeling and give it its own kind of rhythmic identity.
I knew you needed that. For me,
you love the original.
I love the original.
Yeah,
I love those drums.
Yeah,
but I understood it was important for you to move it away.
Thank you for giving me for not for you for
but
letting
you
me do
we
it.
We can tell Sol, you know, it's your song, but it helps wake up lots of people with a smiling face.
Yeah, and right, of course. And look at what you've inspired. You've inspired somebody else to sing it. And, you know, we should also just acknowledge on the record that we, you know, Kevin Johansson sang that song.
Yeah.
And I totally imagined him on it. There are some people that when you imagine their voice on something that you do, then when they come in, they do something totally different.
Yeah.
In Kevin's way, I didn't have to tell him anything. And I knew he was going to understand the song, and he did exactly what you want Kevin Johansson to do on a recording. He was so perfect.
We got things to do. We got places to be seen. We got things to do. We got places to be seen. Night time.
We didn't mention that Jorge Drexler is in Light, and he wrote a kind of another little piece in the middle of the
bridge. Yeah,
a bridge,
so he's
in Spanish.
That's the example I would say. He's the anti Kevin, the anti Kevin. He didn't do what I expected at all, because that's how he is. Hmm. He did something completely different, and I also will just say about that experience that it was the most Jorge thing I could possibly imagine. I was after him to do it for months. As you may remember, there were so many missed attempts. There was one day where you had agreed to do it, and you went to one studio and he went to the other. These are people who live in the same house together. Like, it was unreal.
Just imagine
the chaos in your life. Yes. What is your life like that this is how it happened? That you agree, yes, I'll see you at 2:30 this afternoon, and you go to different locations. So finally, we get him to commit to an afternoon where he's going to do it, and I had sent him the song, and then I sang all of the parts, and I just said, choose one of these parts. You just have to sing one of these voices. I'll sing the other one. Leonor sings the third one.
Oh, it's not going to be that easy
with
Jorge.
And it'll take you 15 minutes, and you'll do it, and 2 hours or 3 hours later, he's like, well, I was thinking that, you know, there's this instrumental part that it could use some voice. And so anyway, and I've just done this kind of Bon Iver style, like multi-layered voice thing, and I put it in Spanish, and then the funniest thing, he goes, but the only way it's going to work is you've got to take out the drums during that part. Like, so now he's arranging the song and all this stuff. But of course, he's Jorge, so it's very special. It's a very special moment that was so much more. He didn't do what I asked him to do. He did so much more than I asked him to do.
Tócala ya en la mecha, enciende el candil, para que abra la luz en la oscuridad, una brecha.
But that's another wonderful one. And Javi Peña, we should just say.
He not only plays in the record, he's an incredible guitarist, but he's also so generous with fellow musicians, wherever they come from, wherever they're from.
Yeah.
He lent us
Geared. The studio where we're sitting right now to do this
also,
interview. And the French guys, my groovy
and
French
the groovy
band.
French guys. Who are the stamina and the fun and
the family
and they do have this tight-knitted groove that just playing live with you guys is so amazing. It's like surfing. I'm just sitting on the surfboard and I just I don't have to do anything.
Well, I feel that nobody feels like they have to do anything. That's a weird experience to be in. I mean, this is part of the reason I want to learn to dance, because I find myself on stage with you where I have to sing a little bit, I have to lead the band, but half the time I'm thinking, I can't believe I'm getting away with this. I can't believe this is my job tonight, is just to do this, just play guitar in my songs and then sing with you a little bit. And it's just I realize that being in a band or having a project, which is actually something that I never really had.
It's awesome.
It's awesome because you have the protection of your fellow bandmates.
I think that's why it never crossed my mind to go solo.
Yeah.
Because also like interviews, promotion, yeah. everything is divided in two.
Yeah.
And everything is, you always can lean on someone.
Yeah.
And I think that's super important for me.
Well, Leonard Watling, thank you for including me in your family and your project.
Thank you.
Oh, now we're shaking hands quite formally.
We're going to hug
when
we take the mics off.
Yeah, it'll be too noisy.
There will be too nosy. Nosy, I said nosy. Do you see my English?
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
Thank you for teaching me that it is never too late. And that's a wrap.
And next interview I do to you.
I want you to. There she was, my friends, Leonore Watling. Just goes to show, even when you know someone for decades, there are still so many questions left to ask. I'll be back again in your headspace with another deep dive before you know it. Until then, I'll talk to you soon.
This has been a WBGO Studios production. To learn more about WBGO Studios' award-winning podcasts, special concerts, live streams, and more, visit wbgo.org/studios.